now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Hey, welcome to October, October 1st. We have definitely made it. I remember celebrating Labor Day and all the kids going back to school and so forth. That's about all I remember of September. But here we are, October 1st, Friday, October 1st. So welcome to the continuation of the autumn season. I am Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like to have more information about me or maybe want to leave me your comments about today's shows or other shows, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, all one word there. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you would like to call in, I always encourage people to do so. That number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. So, let's see, if you're unable to stay with us the whole time for this hour, you can also listen, go back and listen to these shows because they're now podcasted, and you can go back into the archives and listen to those previous shows. Or if you wish, you can download these shows that are now available for download on Audible and Amazon Music. And I just want to take a moment to just express my continued gratification for your support over the year, and would like to say that you now have an opportunity to continue your support by becoming a monthly subscriber to my website, to my show. Now, a subscription is not required to listen to my talk shows, but it is greatly appreciated. So all you have to do is just go onto the website and click on the link, and you'll see the banner up there. You can choose any amount that you feel comfortable giving, and again, I truly, truly appreciate it. Well, as I said, very excited to be with you here today, every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and noon Pacific Standard Time, and anywhere else in between. And for those of you who just might be tuning in for the first time, I just wanted to say welcome to the show, because you'll soon discover that each and every week these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And you see, it really doesn't matter who we are or where we were born or even into what family we were placed. Ours is a world filled with relationships. And this integration of spirituality and mental health fits nicely into how we live out our lives in relationships to one another and ourselves. And indeed, we are social beings who often spend our lives trying to make sense of our world. And we often do that by trying to find our place in the world. And as the social creatures or social beings as it is, it's often within the context of these relationships that we can experience a tremendous amount of pain and suffering. And whether it be from overt acts of betrayal and cruelty that somebody has inflicted against us or on us, or even vice versa, to simply to being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And many people bear the scars of the physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual woundedness. And as I'll be talking about in this show, is basically how we tell those stories about what has happened to us. And you know, we could tell those stories from a place of woundedness or disappointment. And depending on how long we've been carrying, you know, our woundedness or our brokenness around, we just might tell our stories from a deeper place of bitterness. And yet, ironically, just as we experience our woundedness in relationships, it's also within the context of healthier relationships that we are able to find our healing, our voice, our authenticity. The discovery then is often finding the courage to discover that which has always been in you. You know, those gifts and graces and skills and what I call that uniqueness that we come into the world with. The Franciscan scholar John Duns Scotus coined the phrase hachetas, or it's a thisness, that uniqueness about us, that no two people are alike. And I'm a firm believer that we do, all of us, come into this world with everything we need for ourselves and others. But unfortunately, through various experiences, let's say we may have given away parts of ourselves, or if not the whole, of that uniqueness or that thisness that makes us special. And the reason why we may have done this is because perhaps we didn't feel as though we just simply couldn't live up to another person's expectations of us. Or maybe we hid our uniqueness from others in order to survive abuse. Or perhaps, you know, those aspects of ourselves we believe may have been taken away from us, and we didn't really have the strength to fight back, you know, to hang on to those things. But either way, as a result, when we become aware that we've done these things, all is not lost, because I truly believe it takes a tremendous amount of courage to reclaim those parts of ourselves, to actually reclaim who we are. And we can reclaim our voice. We can reclaim that uniqueness. We can reclaim our thisness. And in a sense, this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. And because reclaiming authenticity focuses on this integration of spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships with ourselves, others, and God and the divine. Okay, so it is also something I just want to add on to this, that as we are discovering our greatest parts of ourselves, in other words, who we truly are, we can discover, you know, our greatest sources of healing, strength, peace, forgiveness, and love through healthier relationships. And again, ironically, forgiveness, kindness, compassion, love, and so forth begins with how we treat ourselves. Because whenever we are compassionate with ourselves, we find that we can be more compassionate with others. And when we are more forgiving of ourselves, we then discover that we can be more forgiving with somebody else. And when we're able to find that place where we can just simply live in gratitude with ourselves and however our lives have taken us and so forth, we then discover how this opens our hearts to see and to live in gratitude with others. And as a result, you know, transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. And when transformation occurs, we soon discover that we are going to begin to tell our stories from a different place in us, a place of healing, a place of wholeness, a place of gratitude. Well, how is your heart today? I hope you are well. I hope your heart is well. And even if you are struggling today and things aren't going smoothly for you, or you're really struggling, I pray that you will find rest and comfort and the peace that you need. Well, welcome to today's show. It's entitled The Intuitive Storyteller. The Intuitive Storyteller. Now, I think I had mentioned this a little bit last week. We just started to touch on this theme. But how many of you remember the rock group, the Eagles? I'm sure, you know, people who remember the 70s, maybe you can't remember all or in part for one reason or another, but Eagles were a very prominent group, really a really prominent rock group. And back in 1974, they recorded a song entitled Already Gone, and it was part of their album On the Border. And there's one line in that song that just really stayed with me the first time I heard it. And this is something that I'm sure has guided my life over the years. And the line is, "How often do we live our lives in chains and we never know we have the key?" And then that's pretty profound. You know, how often do we live our lives in chains and we never simply know we have the key all that time? And as I mentioned earlier, this discovery of what lies within us is basically one of my deep-seated beliefs, you know, that everybody comes into the world already gifted with the skills, the talents, the personalities, etc., in order to discover and cultivate and to use all these things to the benefit of others. In other words, we already have the key. And as I was thinking more about this and the topic of what I touched on last week, you know, with the teachers and gurus and the ones that make them most effective and so forth, I just, you know, simply came to just put two and two together here. You know, it's like because we have the key, it's really a teacher's job or a guru's job or a leader's job to point that out, to say the answers lie within you. Because on down through history, you know, often, you know, the greatest spiritual teachers and the gurus and the leaders are the ones who enable us, the ones who empower us to discover the potential of what lies within. Now, a guru is actually a title typically found in Hinduism, you know, and a guru is more than a teacher. You know, and traditionally, the guru is a reverential figure to the student, with the guru serving as more like a counselor, you know, one who helps mold values and shares experiential knowledge as much as literal knowledge and lives an exemplary life, one who is an inspirational source and one who helps in the spiritual evolution of a student. And all in all, a guru is also one spiritual guide who helps another to discover the same potentialities that the guru has already realized. Now, whether it's within Western or Eastern cultures, effective teachers and effective mentors and effective leaders on down throughout history have been characterized by those who help pull out of others the very best of themselves. In fact, they help us to be healed and empowered to tell our stories differently. And the reason why they're able to do this is because they will never, ever allow others to settle for mediocrity. Even if there's resistance on part of students or others, they're patient. You know, they know that everybody is on his or her own spiritual journey, because everyone sooner or later arrives at their own truth. You know, but instead, effective teachers and mentors and leaders really empower others to discover that greatness in themselves. And effective teachers and mentors and leaders never ever seek to control another person. And it's just the opposite. You know, they seek to release, and they hope that we will have the courage to embrace that freedom. You know, we could turn this around and just say, well, you know, it kind of sounds like you can lead a horse to water, you know, but you just can't make them drink it. A lot of times that's just an excuse I'm finding with the people I talk with. You know, they just say, well, you know, I know where the water is. I'm just not ready to take a drink. And, you know, I know what they're saying. It's like, okay, how long do you want to, you know, walk around just parched when there's the water to quench your thirst? you know, the very thing that your heart has been seeking is right in front of you, but what's holding you back from making that next step? What's holding you back from drinking that, shall we say, spiritual water, or whatever water they would need metaphorically to continue their healing? So effective teachers and mentors and leaders never ever seek to control somebody else, you know, but instead they you seek for that person, you know, that release, and they always hold out hope that we're going to have the courage then to do our own work, to embrace the freedom. And great teachers and mentors and leaders can do this because they themselves have discovered how to live in forgiveness and gratitude and love on a daily basis. See, they've also have done their work. They also have walked the path. They also have embraced everything in their lives. They also have dealt with unforgiveness or ingratitude or maybe bitterness or something. They too have struggled, and yet they too have tasted, shall we say, the grace of God. They too have tasted that healing. They know what it's like to be free. They know what it's like to walk in it. And they therefore want to pass that on to others. But they realize that as they are pointing to where these things lie, they also understand that they can't do the work for us. We have to do the work ourselves. You know, but sometimes, you know, I've also discovered, again, in talking with people, that whenever we find an effective teacher or a mentor or a leader, there's this tendency that, you know, we can become complacent, you know, believing that all we need to do is just hang around that a teacher or mentor or leader and just continue to ask for one blessing after another. But, I mean, we can't kid ourselves here. I mean, we have our own spiritual inner work to do in terms of cultivating that forgiveness and gratitude and love into our daily lives. And we do have to listen to our teachers and gurus and mentors and leaders, not to, let's say, yes, you know, what they are saying, but I would say there's much, much more to that. You know, listen to the words, but also listen for their method of how they impart the truth. Because you see, you know, as often is the case, the most effective means of teaching come from people who are great storytellers. You know, from whether it could entail plots or analogies or even irony, storytellers have a way to share ancient wisdom that have ignited tremendous, powerful transformations in those who have ears to hear, so to speak. And nothing touches our hearts as a great teacher who can share a story. Because when you think about it, storytelling is one of the basic and yet most powerful means of imparting truth. Because we take in those stories, not necessarily through our ears, but mainly in our hearts. You know, it's those moments that we often feel whereby the, shall we say, the moral of the story has reached in and grabbed us by the soul and never, ever lets go. And this was something that I was actually asked when I was visiting India the last time. You know, I didn't know much of the language. In fact, I knew how to say please, thank you, and where's the bathroom, along with a couple of other things. But, you know, I was just sitting and listening to, you know, several gurus lecture. And I was asked, you know, through one interpreter, one of the gurus asked me, what do you do since you don't know the language and yet you are sitting here listening to the teachings? And, you know, my only response was, well, it's true, I don't know the words, but I do listen to the vibration of the words. I feel the vibration of the words. I listen for the tones. I listen for the inflections. I pay attention to how my heart is vibrating and how my heart is feeling. Well, I must have answered that question correctly, because when it was translated to the guru, that person got a huge smile on their face because they knew exactly what I was saying. Okay. Well, let's turn back the clock, shall we? Let's think about the time when we were little boys and girls. Okay. And, you remember what it was like when we were younger and let's say our mother or a father or another person read to us a story. We sat there listening intently to the words, and we allowed those stories to form images and colors, sounds and fantasies in our minds. In fact, how often did we sit on the edge of our seats, or maybe in some cases, we laid in our beds in anticipation for what would come next? And we would always have, say, a little feeling of disappointment when, okay, I'll read you more tomorrow night, or okay, that's the end of the chapter. We'll have to pick up a new chapter tomorrow. And we're like, no, you can't do that. You can't stop a story right in the middle. But that's, usually we get a chapter, maybe two chapters, depending. But yeah, we had to wait for what was going to come next, right? Well, storytelling and listening to stories are not just for the young, because as a mental health clinician and a pastoral professional, storytelling and listening to stories really go hand in hand. And some people are better storytellers than others. I mean, let's face it. Some storytellers stick to a well-rehearsed script, making sure every little detail is shared. And then there's other people who are kind of all over the place with their thoughts and leaving out important details and then, again, making up others. But then there are some people who have never had a chance to share the story of their lives with somebody else. In fact, if truth be told, some people have never been given the chance, or I'll even say permission, to share stories that lie deep within, underneath their emotional wounds and scars, the scars that are hidden from the rest of the world. And when this occurs, helping people find their narrative empowers them also to find their healing. Well, narrative therapy is a style of therapy that helps people become the intuitive expert in their own lives. It is a therapy that I have embraced. I enjoy it. I've seen it transform many lives because with narrative therapy, there is an emphasis on our stories that we develop and we carry with us throughout our lives. And narrative therapy is a form of therapy that views people separate from their problems. And that's ultimately the goal. And an example of this would be to help a person as they tell their story to separate what has happened to them as an individual or a family and their interpretations or their assumptions of the story from who they are as a person. One who has value, dignity, and worth. And there are actually three benefits to this approach to narrative therapy. The first is to, place any untold or unspoken moments of a person's life into his or her current story. In other words, what else needs to be shared? What are other aspects of your life which you haven't told anybody? What are the stories that stay hidden? Or we can even take this really deep and say, what are the stories that need to be told that you don't share in between the words? The stories that need to be shared in silence or pauses from one sentence to another. Secondly, this narrative therapy also helps people connect, to the emotional content of their stories and helps them retell their stories from not just a head context, but also from a head center. And it really matches up the head and the heart, okay? Because the emotional content of telling a story is very much important. Otherwise, if we're telling a story without the emotional content, we're just simply reporting. You know, it's like we're void of, you know, where are we in the story? And three, you know, narrative therapy helps people construct new perspectives and new insights in relation to how they tell their stories. So it creates a kind of an awareness. It creates a sense of, a sense of self in the stories. And again, this is what makes effective teachers and sages and gurus and leaders and mentors is that they know how to enter into another person's life story. And they know how to become part of it. And as a result, they transform the other person into embracing who they are and the potential for them to be something they may even have yet to realize. Well, ironically, I had such an experience that was, I would say, the catalyst for me entering into transforming intergenerational trauma. And it all started with a drop of blood. I was visiting a Native American Indian elder, a friend and teacher of mine, who we were outside and he noticed that I cut myself on his wooden chair. And in all seriousness, it was a deep splinter from a rough board, but in the end, it turned out to be a life-changing lesson. Now, before I could wipe away the blood from my finger, my teacher grabbed my hand and he told me to take a long look at the blood. He said, just don't wipe it away yet. Just look at it. And he asked me, what do you see when you look at your blood? I don't really know what you mean, I replied. But no, he said, no, look more closely at your blood. What do you see? And again, I wasn't getting the message. So superficially, I should say, I answered, O positive. And I know in that moment, his tone softened as he looked directly at me. And he said, no, look again at your finger, your blood. Who do you see? Oh, okay. I was beginning to understand, but I still, was struggling to put into words what he meant. But we sat there in silence for what seemed to be an eternity. I don't know how long it was, but finally he broke the silence and he explained. He said, look, there is life in your blood. Not just your life, but also the lives of your ancestors and your relations, generations and generations whose DNA and yours are all there in a single drop of blood. I listened to his words, but to be quite honest, they didn't exactly sink in. So like many of my moments of profound insight, the most lasting lessons often begin in the midst of confusion and pain. And, maybe one day I'll just have to tell you about the scar on my left thumb. That was a life-changing lesson right there, too. Well, ironically, I, of course, had to get below the surface of my bloody finger and perceive something that I had not been taught or trained or even consider. I mean, what was my teacher talking about? My relations. What was he talking about with generations and ancestors? And how could he share that just by looking at a single drop of my blood? Well, my mind quickly took me back to my high school days when, we looked at blood under a microscope in biology class. I don't know if they still do that, but hey, in my day of biology class, anything we could get under the microscope, we tried to. Okay, but since I typically did not carry a microscope around with me, I had to rely on my teacher's years of skilled perception of the soul. Look again at your blood and tell me, who do you see? Well, thinking I understood now what he meant, I replied, oh, okay, I see my parents. I see my grandparents. I see my great-grandparents. And I even see my great-great-grandparents. "Is that all?" he asked. You know, and he was pushing me a little bit further. He's like, "Okay, you're getting it, but let's go deep." And I said, "Yeah, I mean," and I replied, as you know, as I further explained that this is about as far as I knew about my genealogy. And when I mentioned my genealogy, he curled his lip and he raised one eyebrow. And from his expression, you know, I knew that, okay, you're just not getting this lesson. And then again, he said to me, "Do you not see the generations of those who have come before you, in whose blood, your blood, carries the DNA of their lives and yours? Because more than just every characteristic of genes, can you also see their personalities, their character strengths, their flaws, their struggles, their triumphs, their joys, their fears, their mistakes? Can you see their souls when they took their very first breath? Can you see them before what we would call time? Can you see them that instant when the Creator dreamt them and even you?" Well, my head was spinning at the moment, and I felt like I was in a dream state. I mean, I just, like, which way is up kind of attitude. And sensing that I could handle more of this revelation in the moment, my teacher added, "Now, once you can see those who have come before you, you will then also be able to see those who will come after you, those who are alive but yet to be born. And you are all there in that single drop of blood." Well, dear friends, I would really love to hear what's on your heart about this subject of being intuitive storytellers. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008, and I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Hey, welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Just before I go any further in the show, I just wanted to share a little bit about what I'm going to be talking about next week. Because now we are in fall, and because now we are in October, it won't take long before we start raking leaves. And whenever I hear the rake just scratch against the ground, and other people are raking leaves and putting them in bags or burning them, whatever you do with them, it always reminds me of the story, The Fall of Freddy the Leaf. Great, great children's story that really, really drives home the truth of just how we're connected to many, many things and how we see ourselves as part of something larger. And the first time I read Fall of Freddy the Leaf, it was just, I would say, decades ago, and fell in love with it, of course. So I'll be sharing a little bit about the life of the author, as well as the implications and the lessons that we can learn from the story, The Fall of Freddy the Leaf. So tune in next week. Well, earlier in the show, I was talking about how storytelling and listening to stories go hand in hand. And some people are better storytellers than others. I mean, we've all listened to them and so forth, and you know, we can say, well, some have pretty much stuck to a well-rehearsed script, and you know, they make sure that every little detail is shared, and others are more or less going off the cuff, and you know, they're all over the place with their thoughts. They leave out important details, or they forget some things, or you don't know how much of this that they're making up. And then there are some people who, they don't know what it's like to be a storyteller because nobody has given them permission. Now, they may have started out trying to share their story, but for one reason or another, they feel like they've been shut down, or they feel as though nobody really wanted to listen. Nobody wanted to hear what they had to say. And in fact, a lot of people just, were content to kind of, go back inside and, just be content with never giving the permission to share their stories that lie deep within. And everybody has those kinds of stories that, if we look hard enough, we could just, all we have to do is not kick over a rock, but, we just look underneath our emotional wounds and scars, and there they are. These are stories that need to be shared, and they're waiting to be shared. They're waiting to come out because we need to share those stories, and other people need to hear them. Okay, because whenever this occurs, whenever we share our stories and people are listening to stories and our stories and your stories, it really helps people find their narrative that empowers them to also find their healing. And in case you missed it earlier, just to backtrack here with narrative therapy, it's a style of therapy that really helps people become that intuitive expert, of their own life, because they're sharing their own story. And who better knows their story than the person themselves? And now, in narrative therapy, there is an emphasis on our stories that we develop and that we carry with us through our lives. These stories, we're never going to forget. Okay, because they're not made up, but they are based in historical events. They're based in facts. They're based in our perceptions and our assumptions and so forth. And narrative therapy is very effective in that it helps people view themselves separate from their problems. Okay, and it's not just what has happened to me, but it's also my interpretation and my assumptions of that, and trying to make sense of my world as a result of something I have gone through. And it's very easy at times to connect that story or that interpretation or an assumption from who we are as people of value, dignity, and worth. You see, you might have done some pretty awful things in your life, but does that make you an awful person? No. And you're a person who came into this world already equipped and graced, as I said before, with everything you need. But perhaps you have not recognized and embraced your fullest potential. Therefore, you are a person with value, dignity, and worth. But there are times when we act out of ignorance of it. And part of healing from our past not only involves telling stories, but also involves reclaiming our empowerment to rewrite the stories that are now life-empowering and affirming. And we don't achieve this empowerment, from, let's say, an embellished or delusional view that nicely ties up our stories in just a bright red bow. And again, there's three benefits that, people gain from engaging in narrative therapy. One, we place any untold or unspoken moments of our lives into our current story. And these are the ones which, let's say the stories that are underneath, the emotional wounds or the emotional scars that we have never told anybody else before. We maybe got to a point in our lives and we soon discovered that it wasn't safe to share those things with others. Or perhaps we were telling the story to people who didn't want to hear it, or they didn't know what to do with it. or maybe they were so uncomfortable about the story itself, but yet we took it personally. And we just said, well, if they're uncomfortable with my story, then they must be uncomfortable with me. And again, that's not the case, but that's our assumption. Okay. So in addition to getting to the untold or unspoken moments or events in a person's life and just, integrating them into our current stories, the next thing we do is that we are, we have to make sure that we connect, this emotional content of ourselves and of the story and retell the story from a head and a heart center. We cannot tell our stories that are without feeling. It doesn't work. We cannot tell our stories from, let's say the stance of a robot, where we just make sure we have all the facts and figures and that's it. We just kind of parrot the story. But again, when we are able to find that emotional content, it becomes a story with flesh on it, shall we say. It becomes a story that really needs to be told. It becomes a story that really, catches the attention, the not just the eyes and ears of others, but also grabs a person by the heart, and they're able to put themselves in the story. They can identify with the story and so forth. Okay. And the last thing with narrative therapy is it really helps people construct new perspectives and new insights that they've gained in relation to how they tell their stories. Okay, and in a little bit, I'm going to, share, how is this possible? How can we begin to tell the story differently and yet stay true to the facts and figures? Well, the whole aspect of that is, we're never going to forget what happened to us. I mean, facts are facts, events have happened, experiences, we cannot go back and rewrite history, but it's our perspectives. It's actually what we tell ourselves after something has happened to us, that we develop this, shall we say, distorted narrative that has now become our life story. But there's ways to heal that, okay? Because in addition to narrative therapy, one of the other methods that I use in helping people just how they tell their story and to listen to their story and to heal from their past actually comes from an Austrian-born physician and psychotherapist and the pioneer of, let's say, individual psychology. And I'm talking about Alfred Adler. And Adler himself, he believed that stories not only provided a form to our earliest memories, but again, he also believed that these stories became a blueprint for how we live our lives in relations to others. And every time, part of the technique is when we go to tell an earliest memory, Adler would say, okay, go back, way back, and try to remember your earliest memory, whatever it is, whatever it might be. Okay. And again, we have to write it down because writing things down, we remember those things. It makes it 50 times more powerful to remember than just simply talking about it. So as we're writing down our earliest memory and we've exhausted it, let's say, it could be a number of things. Let's say we can go back in our lives and our earliest memory is at 4 years old when we've knocked over a bottle of juice or something like that and it just went everywhere, went into our spaghetti and whatever else we were trying to eat when we were that young. And let's say we get the message of, what's wrong with you? Can't you do anything right? You're so clumsy. So on and so forth. Okay. We're scolded because we simply knocked over our juice. Okay. Well, as we're telling that story, or I should say, as we're writing it down, once we've exhausted that story, we go back and as a 4-year-old, okay, not not at the age that you are now, but as a four-year-old, we answer, or I should say, we fill in the blank to these sentences. I am, and then whatever we feel as though, you know, we should answer that. And then others are, the world is, and therefore I will. Okay, so I am, others are, the world is, and therefore I will. Okay, so let's say as a four-year-old, okay, we have that experience, that memory of knocking over our juice inadvertently because we're clumsy. Come on, we're three, all right? And it goes everywhere, spills, you know, down the floor and on the spaghetti and, you know, just we made a mess, okay? But, you know, as that four-year-old, we might say, well, you know, and hearing, you know, somebody yell at us for doing that, calling us names or whatever, you know, we might say, I am stupid. And others are angry. The world is harsh or painful. And therefore, I will hide. Okay, that's just an example. Okay, let's say that when we were 3 or 4 years old, but we have that memory. But the key now is that we are starting to lay the groundwork or that blueprint for other memories to follow, because something else we might remember might also follow that pattern of I am stupid, or others are angry, or the world, you know, is whatever, and then therefore I will hide. Okay, and it just, those kinds of perceptions, those kinds of assumptions, those kinds of early interpretations just really start to take root in us. And we have a hard time separating the fact that we have value, dignity, and worth from, okay, we knocked over some juice, relax, juice could be wiped up, but you're still a good boy. You're still a good girl. You're still beautiful. Don't worry about it. And again, it's when we're 3 or 4 years old, even 2 years old, we get that message of shame. And then later on, we get guilt because we may not be able to do some things. But really, shame is much, much more toxic than anything else in our lives. And yet it has that potential to start to take root in our lives when we're babies. But as we tell our stories, we get in touch with, okay, where did that shame come from? Okay, because every time, you know, Adler would say, okay, that's the first memory, you know, and as we tell other memories, you know, we just might be able to see that pattern, like I said. You know, we also become aware of just the perspectives that we've attached to, as well as how this emotional attachment affects how we tell that story. You know, now granted, we may not be able to recall every experience, but for those moments that stand out to us, they serve as our unconscious logic, shall we say, about how we see ourselves and our relationship with others and the motivation for our behavior today. Okay. Well, maybe you're like me, you know, maybe as a boy, you know, I remember listening to the same family stories at picnics, holidays, and other family gatherings. You know, I've heard these accounts and recounts so often, but you know, by the time I was a teenager, I could recite them word for word. Okay, and now with the benefit of hindsight, I also understand that not only did these details of what happened in these stories, not only did these details not change, but also the storyteller's interpretation and attitudes remained the same. You know, and it was only after like careful scrutiny of like, how are these stories being told that I started to hear and see this underlying tone of helplessness, bitterness, sadness, and resentment that drove how the story was told and from whom. I mean, ironically, it was almost as if the story was not being told correctly if these negative emotions were absent. So the first thing we need to do is to listen to how our stories are told. Yes, facts and figures and names and places are important, but what's even more significant is how we tell our stories. The words that we use, are they filled with, the story is filled with symbols and metaphors? Are they filled with positive and negative, affirming or frightful words? Are they filled with, emotion, and do they have powerful images? Because one of the things that I've discovered in counseling others, especially those who are struggling with intergenerational trauma, is that I've noticed that when people have not been able to transform the negative energy around tragic events, their stories are told the same each time, every time. And yet when healing occurs within the greater context of generations, people tell their stories much differently. They tell stories from a healthier, more holistic perspective. And the reason why we can tell our stories differently is because much of the healing involves becoming aware of the former negative perceptions and self-talk that no longer serve us. In other words, we recognize how, let's say, these cognitive schemas have been draining our energy, and how they've been distorting our perceptions, and how they've been diminishing our potential for healthier relationships. In fact, whenever we replace these with more transformative and life-giving perspectives, I like to refer to this as a starburst of energy that goes out in all directions and heals all generations across time and space. And yet, it is what happens in the ordinary, our stories themselves, and allowing room for the extraordinary acts of God in ordinary, everyday aspects of our lives that we need to pay attention to have this awareness, to have this understanding. Because many people will ask us to share our stories. Many people might even ask you today, tell me about that. Or like, what was that thing that you were involved in again, or whatever it was. But listen to how you tell that story. Because whenever we find that healing, the first thing that's going to change is the next time we tell that story. And when we discover, ourselves are telling a story or our history from an unhealthy perspective or, an attachment, we can perhaps also discover the root causes of our unforgiveness and pain and bitterness and woundedness. And this is where the inner work of unforgiveness, ingratitude, and bitterness begins. Now, when we begin to heal, our stories are now going to be told from a healthier perspective, a place from one's inner peace and wholeness. I mean, think about your own stories for a minute. Think about how you tell them. Think about also to whom you tell them. Think about the people who have caused you pain and disappointment. Think about the people who have caused you misery and heartbreak. Think about the people who you have caused pain and disappointment, misery and heartbreak. Listen to the tone you use whenever you tell these stories. Has anything changed from when you first started telling that story? What if you told your story differently? What would change? As I said, obviously, we can't go back and rewrite history, but what if we could change how we tell the story by inserting a different perspective or even a wish? And this is what I mean here. What would happen if in thinking about the people in our stories, that we would not, shall we say, call them names or label them in any way, but what would happen if in telling our stories we would see them as wounded, or as wounded as much as we are? What if we're able to see that instead of wishing them pain, we realize that they must have been in pain also in themselves? What if in telling our stories, instead of cursing them, what if instead we wish them healing? Because that's what they need. I mean, how then would we be able to tell our stories? I would imagine we would be telling those stories from a more intuitive place within ourselves that has been awakened and blessed by its own taste of transformative grace. And this is where we will find great storytelling. This is where we're going to find, you know, those very effective, great teachers in our lives and great mentors and gurus and great leaders. People who know how to empower others because they have a way of stepping into our stories and pointing out not what's wrong with us, but pointing out the potential for our healing, grace, growth, strength, the potential for us to find the wholeness that we've come into the world already with. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I invite you to be with me next week as we're going to be taking a closer look at one of my favorite tales, the story of the fall of Freddie the Leaf. In the meantime, everybody, please be safe out there and be well, and of course, behave yourselves. All right, you take care, and we'll talk next week. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific Time on PBS Radio TV.